Hey, everybody, this is Pierre Quinn, and you're listening to the Leading While Green podcast, where my mission is to help you live, learn, and lead with confidence. Here on episode number 31, I'm coming to you from the Windy City. That's right, coming to you from Chicago. And on this episode of the podcast, I'll give a shout out to all of my YouTube mechanics. We'll talk about the end of an era and the desperate search for meaning. So listen up. Yeah, I'm in Chicago this weekend. Well, it's Thursday. I'm recording this podcast on a Thursday, but I'm in Chicago for the rest of the week on into the weekend. And this weekend is really a double dip for me. I get to speak at a church on Saturday afternoon doing some leadership development with the ministry leaders there. And then on Sunday, I'll be speaking at the National Education Association Leadership Summit. So looking forward to both of those sessions. But I'm here in Chicago, here in a hotel room and podcasting on the go. Don't have my setup, don't have my cord for my travel mic. Just, man, just trying to grind it out and make it happen. And just another lesson in how do you respond when things aren't perfect or the way that you're accustomed to having them? So, what do we do with life now? What do we do with life now when there are millions of Americans who are my age who feel like their childhood has been obliterated? Okay, before we get into that, I want to talk to you about an adventure that I had yesterday. So for several days, one of the headlights in our car was done. Kaput, it had blown out. We were driving like a one-eyed monster at night, just with one headlight. And I knew that I had to change the headlight. So here's the thing. I've changed tons of headlights before in cars. Even before I was old enough to drive, my dad taught me how to change the bulbs, the headlight bulbs. So it's not a big deal, not a big challenge. Anybody could really do it. And then I tried to do it in my car. And for some reason, the make and model of my car is just not the easy headlight changing type of car. So I went on YouTube, and that's what we do. Shouts out to all my YouTube mechanics. Several years ago, I fixed the thermostat, where I replaced the thermostat on my van because of a YouTube video. And man, if you can watch the YouTube video and you can do it yourself, shouts out to you saving that money. Going to take twice as long or three times as long if you're not mechanically inclined. But if you can save the money by watching a video and getting a tutorial that way, then that's what you got to do. And that's what I did. I watched several YouTube videos on how to change the bulb, the headlight bulb in a 2012 Chevy Malibu. All right. Keep all your jokes about my car, about my Chevy Malibu. Keep all your jokes to yourself. But watched several YouTube videos and thought I could do it. Just it seemed like a lot of work. And if you put in change headlight 2012 Chevy Malibu, you'll see for yourself. It was just a lot of work. So I was trying to figure out, did I really want to tackle this? Now, the alternative is $100+ for somebody to change the light bulb. And I know it sounds crazy, right? But I wasn't about to spend that money. So dug through the garage. My wife helped me find my socket set. Had my tools, had pliers, had gloves, had the YouTube video handy. And it was so frustrating because I had to take the bumper off of the car. Yep, that's right. I had to take the bumper off of the car. Now, the issue was the light. The light had blown and I had to replace the bulb. But in order to get to the bulb, I had to take the bumper out off of the car. Before I took the bumper out of the car, I had to take this plastic covering. When you lift up the hood, there's this plastic covering. I had to take that out. I had no idea what it is. So take the plastic covering off. Then I had to unscrew all of these plastic, loosen all of these plastic pins and unscrew these bolts. And it was just a lot of work, just a lot of effort to get this stuff done. And it took me about over an hour to get everything apart, get everything get the bumper off and take out these pins and take out these screws and take out these bolts and take everything off. And I realized, because, you know, I'm always looking for leadership moments, I realized that oftentimes when we're trying to solve problems, we look at one issue, one challenge, one disagreement, one unfortunate circumstance, and we're laser focused on that one thing. What we often overlook are all the things connected to it. So in order for me to get to this blown light bulb, I had to take off this plastic covering. I had to take off the bumper. I had to take off these plastic pins. I had to do all of this work. I had to unscrew the light from the harness. It was just all of this work just to get to this bulb. And often in our rush as leaders to fix problems, we overlook or just try to power through or push over all of the things that the issue is connected to. All of the spaghetti-like tentacles connected to this particular issue. And in order to really fix the issue or address the issue, you have to break it down layer by layer. So only after doing all of that work, that hour's worth of work to get everything off and put all the pins and screws and bolts in place so I don't lose them, was I able to get to the light bulb. And I put the light bulb in and I tested it, and success. I was excited because we got the light bulb replaced. But now I had to go through the arduous process of putting everything back together again, reversing the process and putting everything back together. And sometimes in our rush to fix stuff and overlooking issues or pushing stuff to the side, and we finally get to whatever the root cause is, we forget that we have to address all the steps that it took for us to get there. Now, the good news about it was putting it back together was much easier. Well, it went much faster than actually taking it apart. I knew where everything went. And I was pretty familiar, pretty intimate with the bumper of my car at this stage of the game. And it was good to be able to put it back together and drive down the road and put everything back where it needed to be. So shouts out to all my real mechanics out there. And you guys do an incredible job, those of you who are honest and fair. And shout out to all of my YouTube mechanics, all of my YouTube plumbers, all of my do-it-yourself people who go on YouTube and figure out how to do stuff on their own. But here's the thing. Once you get to it, once you fix it, once you replace it, you still have to put things back together. And if you don't put things back together carefully, you can actually end up doing more harm than good. Same thing for our capacity and the things we're called to do as leaders. We're trying to fix and address issues and problems, but we have to see all the areas that the problem is connected to and make sure we do our due diligence in those areas too. So sitting here from the comfort of my hotel room here in Chicago, and you might hear anything. You know how these hotel rooms are. The walls are super, 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 super thin. So you might hear a shower from the next room, a toilet from the next room, somebody delivering pizza, cars driving by, whatever it is. But that's hotel life, right? Well, the reason why I'm in Chicago, and I mentioned this at the top of the podcast, I have an opportunity to speak at the National Education Association Leadership Summit on Sunday. I'm looking forward to that experience, sharing some content from my book, Leading While Green, How Emerging Leaders Can Ripen Into Effective Leaders. So I think I got about 60 to 70 people. I have to check the update. 60 to 70 people signed up for this session, thousands of people at this conference. So it's going to be really, really good. And you know how I go. You know what my perspective is on this. If you're doing the keynote with every conference attendee, or if you're just doing a breakout session or a workshop, you got to give it everything that you got. And often keynotes and seminars and breakout sessions actually lead to seminars, breakout sessions, and workshops lead to keynotes or lead to other opportunities to share. So keep that in mind. Keep that in mind as you're doing your search on the internet for different places to speak and share your talent. But I'm also in town to speak for a friend of mine at his church, Independence Boulevard, Seventh-day Adventist Church, speaking there Saturday afternoon, doing a session on spiritual leadership. So that should be really, really, really good. And I'm looking forward to it. What I'm not looking forward to is reading more articles about Toys R Us. I scanned a couple articles, skimmed a couple articles, and I mentioned Toys R Us some time ago on this podcast that officially with Toys R Us, we've come to the end of an era. We've come to an end of the end of an era. And it's heartbreaking because Toys R Us was a vital part of my childhood. But the reports looked on CNN, looked at a couple of news outlets saying that Toys R Us is gonna close all its stores, gonna liquidate its assets, really just gonna shut everything down. And you gotta ask yourself, how do we get to this point? How do we get to this point of beyond fixing, beyond repair? And I know what the knee-jerk reaction is. The knee-jerk reaction is it's Amazon's fault. Well, it's Walmart's fault. And if Amazon hadn't come on strong, if Walmart hadn't been coming on so strong and moving into different parts of the marketplace, then we would still have Toys R Us with us the same way we always remember it. Well, maybe, but that's not really fair. That's not really fair to place all the responsibility on a different entity. The question that you have to ask yourself is, what were the things that Toys R Us should have done for itself, regardless to what the competition was doing? So here's how Toys R Us lost it. And part of this is from my personal evaluation, and part of this is from a CNN article that I read. And I'll put the CNN article in the show notes so you can read it for yourself. Well, a big way that Toys R Us messed up is Toys R Us did a good job of capturing me and my timeline of growing up, and with its commercials and its ads and Jeffrey Giraffe. I don't know how many of you know Jeffrey Giraffe or remember Jeffrey Giraffe. And if you're much younger than I am, you're just going to have to Google it. Okay. Jeffrey Giraffe was the mascot for Toys R Us back when brands had mascots. But I remember the song, the Toys R Us jingle, the Jeffrey Giraffe, going to the store. Toys R Us, when I was growing up, did a very good job of capturing me and making me into a fan or a believer. What Toys R Us never really did, Toys R Us never really captured my children. Now, maybe the line of thinking was, since we've captured all of these people who are young adults, now that they have children, they will sell Toys R Us to their children. But that's not the way it works, because Toys R Us did not develop marketing to capture the attention of my children. My children were perfectly fine going to Walmart for their purchases, perfectly fine with ordering things off of Amazon or some other internet supplier. But the thing is, if you capture the attention, if you capture the loyalty, the fan base of children, children will stick with you. They will stick with you through the ups and downs of the trends. And toy marketers know this. And you would think that Toys R Us would employ some of the best toy marketers or marketing agencies around to make this happen. So one thing that Toys R Us did not do is that it did not capture my children. Now, here's the thing. It's not just for Toys R Us. It's for other organizations, too. It's for the organizations that captured the hearts and minds of our parents but never captured ours. They had the loyalty of our parents but never had the loyalty of never had our loyalty. And I'm about to be 37. There are many organizations that never pivoted to addressing and connecting to the needs and interests of the next generation. And let me tell you, needs and interests are the same. They're the same. And I'll talk about needs and interests a little bit when I talk about the search for meaning at the bottom of the podcast. So here's another way that Toys R Us failed. They refused to stay competitive. Now, when you're arguably the biggest toy company out there, the toy selling company out there, I know FAO Schwarz was big for a while. They closed recently. Toys R Us had huge market share for a long time. The expectation, if when you're known for something, is saying, well, people have to shop here. People have to check us out. People have to stay with us because we're the best toy seller there is. And what that does is that makes you lazy, and that keeps you in a place where you're not competitive. And even if you have control of market share, even if you're the most notable, even if you're the biggest influencer, you're still in competition with who you were yesterday. You're still in competition with your influence and your effectiveness from yesterday. And if you're not continuing to want to outdo the things that you did next yesterday, then eventually you're not going to be competitive and the market is going to shift without you. There's another reason why Toys R Us just lost it. They decided to innovate too late. Now, in one of the articles, well, in the CNN article, it talks about how they were going to look to use a cash injection to build playrooms and birthday parties. Here's the thing. Building playrooms, building birthday parties, that's old. That's like behind the times. Every place has a place for birthday parties. They got birthday parties at Chick-fil-A. That's so behind the times. And often when organizations are on the verge of just sputtering out, it's then that they want to rush to innovate. And the innovations that they're trying to put forward, that they finally give the culture permission to pass forward, is really old stuff. And it needs a much more drastic push and turn in order to survive this downward spiral. But many times, especially with your more seasoned organizations, they're unwilling to do that. So Toys R Us just tried to innovate too late. The party thing should have happened 20 years ago. This downward spiral really started in 2005, and they never pivoted. You never see much this burst from Toys R Us on social media. There was so much they could have done, but they refused to do it. There's another reason how Toys R Us lost. They had a lack of decent wages. Now, you got to check this stuff out from companies like Southwest. I flew Southwest to get to Chicago. Shouts out to Southwest. To companies like Costco. Listen, if you take care of your people will take care of your customers. That's regardless of industry. We have all this stuff going on now about teachers. What are we going to do about teachers and the whole school shootings and the challenges going on in schools? And how do we create a better environment? Here's a simple solution. Treat your teachers better. Give your teachers a decent wage and give your teachers the tools that they need to have success in the classroom. If you give your teachers better tools, if you support them, if you encourage them, if professional development is meaningful, it's not just old played out slides and monotonous talking. If you really pour into your teachers, the outcome is that you will have a different working environment. It happens across industries. When you take care of your employees take care of your customers. It's the same thing in the church space. Those of us who are part of denominations, we see sometimes the lack of in the structure taking care of the frontline worker. The frontline worker is a pastor. I serve as a pastor myself. And as a frontline worker, if you resource the pastor, if you support the pastor, if you make sure the pastor has all the tools that they need to be successful and they're supported, then the pastor will work hard to take care of the customers. And that may be a crude way of looking at it, but and you say, well, we don't want to think of church members as customers. But in a way, I mean, they are. You have a product that you're trying to provide for them. And if you're not providing a quality product, they are shopping. They are going somewhere else. You can talk about a lot of lack of faith, a lack of intentionality, a lack of respect for spiritual things. You can say whatever you want to. But if your product is not a quality product, then people are going to look elsewhere. Here's another thing. When you don't support your top talent, I can guarantee you this. You know, regardless of industry, if it's in education, if it's in the corporate world, if it's in the nonprofit sector, if it's in faith-based institutions, if you are not supporting your top talent is already looking for a job somewhere else. That's right. I said it. If you are not supporting your top talent is always looking for a job somewhere else. So one of the counties here in Maryland, I'm in Chicago, right? And one of the counties in Maryland close to where I live, there's a high teacher turnover. And part of the reason why people say it's a high teacher turnover is because the students are difficult to deal with. Now, that may be the case, but part of the high teacher turnover comes from not feeling like you're resourced, comes from teachers trying to get into a different county with different budgets and different priorities and different objectives. So they know that they will be supported. When you support your frontline people, I'm telling you, when you support your frontline people, you don't have to worry about those who are under them, and you don't have to worry about your employees, your customers. If you support your frontline employees, you don't have to worry about those who work for them, and you don't have to worry about your customers. But if you're cutting corners, if you're pinching pennies and not pouring into those on the front line, wherever it is, if you're not pouring into those who are working on the front lines, then your frontline talent is already looking for a job somewhere else. Here's the last reason why Toys R Us lost it. Here's the last reason. And this is in my opinion. Well, this is comes from the CNN article. The CNN article didn't come out and say this, but they said one of the reasons why Toys R Us struggled is that they refused to close struggling stores. This is how I interpret that. They delayed in making hard decisions. The longer you delay in making hard decisions, the bigger the weight of that decision. And when you finally make it, often it's too late. Often the damage is irreparable. They delayed because Toys R Us delayed in closing low performing and underperforming stores. When the wheels were about to fall off the wagon, they said, okay, let's hurry up and close stores. But by then it was too late. When you go into Toys R Us, if you've gone into Toys R Us in the last 5 years or so, you notice there's no employees in the store, really. There's no draw. There's no buy-in. And the thing about the employees, the type of employees that work at the store, you could tell because of the culture of Toys R Us at the time, it was just employing people who were desperate to get a job. It did not employ people who were high energy, who were big on kids, who were kid friendly. And this is from Toys R Us stores that I've visited across the country. The type of staff that you employ and how you prep them for their jobs, it creates a culture. It creates a culture. And if you're not undergirding that culture, Toys R Us built itself when I was growing up as a destination, as a great place for kids, like a vacation. Even if you didn't buy anything, going to Toys R Us was a crazy vacation of spending an hour looking at toys and just dreaming about the possibilities. But if you don't have the people there helping to maintain that culture, that fun atmosphere, and you're just employing people who are desperate to get a job and have not bought into the vision and culture, and eventually it's going to fall off. So sadly, it's an end of an era for Toys R Us. The end of an era. Hashtag goodbye childhood. Childhood is gone because Toys R Us refused to do the things that they needed to do to survive. And speaking of survival, I was having a conversation with one of my mentors about just how lives and times are changing. And he was saying he's retired, but he continues to teach courses and he's had a great career. He talks about how as an older male, it's frustrating for him when he sees so many young people and even older people just staring into the screens of their phone when they're out to eat, when they're at the mall, when they're sitting by themselves, just staring in the screens. In my position, well, my response was, I think our needs are the same, but the technology has shifted. And here's what I mean by that. In every decade, we have struggled to find meaning. During the Industrial Revolution, the big place of meaning or source of meaning was the company that you work for. It was the same in the 70s and 80s growing up in a manufacturing town of Pontiac, Michigan, where General Motors and Ford were a mainstay. People identified themselves by the company that they worked for. And it was a sense of pride in that search and that quest for meaning. 60s and 70s, civil rights, many people hopped on board to fight for civil rights. And that gave them meaning. That gave them meaning in their lives. When you look at the 90s, maybe 90s and 2000s, I mean, it was huge on brand recognition in terms of clothing. It's not so much like that now, but lives were determined by the clothes that you wore. Now brands are all over and people are shopping anywhere, but there was a section of time, there was a decade in there where what you wore, the label that you wore, the brand name that you wore really defined you. Like in every era, in every section, and even before being defined as someone who shopped at Toys R Us as a mainstay of my life, every era, every generation, every decade is on a search for meaning. And we're going to find meaning in fighting for political views and political opportunities, fighting for civil rights, fighting for education, fighting for these all of these equality conversations that are going on. If it's a fight for the integration of technology, a fight for resources, trying to become part of a club, fraternity, sorority, nonprofit association, volunteerism, this church, that church, all of us are in a desperate search for meaning. We're in a desperate search for belonging. We want to know that we matter. We want to know when we talk that people listen and value what we say and take our advice to heart. We want to know that people want to be around us. And sometimes because of the way that life has shifted, it's easier for people to have an argument on a social media thread to feel like their voice would be heard instead of having a face-to-face conversation. It's easy for them to follow certain hashtags or be a part of certain Facebook groups or post things in cyberspace than to have a real face-to-face conversation. And some people find meaning and they find community in these digital spaces. My challenge to you as a leader is one, not to look down on people for looking to find meaning in digital spaces. Because the search for meaning is the same. We're all searching for meaning. It's where we go to find meaning that's different. Here's the other thing. Ask yourself, what am I doing to help the people around me, the people that work for me, the people that work with me, the people that benefit from my work? What am I doing to help them find meaning? What am I doing to help them feel like they matter, that their voice is heard? How am I giving them opportunities to make a contribution? What would make them buy in to this project, to this team, to this job? What would make them buy? What do they get from the experience? And how can I help to make it worthwhile for them? Because if I'm not making a difference, if I'm not supporting and encouraging, if I'm not providing opportunities for people to use their gifts and talent, their God-given gifts and talents and abilities, if I'm not meeting a need as a leader, helping my organization meet a need in people's lives, I guarantee you they're looking for community elsewhere. And not only are they looking for community elsewhere, they're finding community elsewhere. And I can stand on the outside pointing fingers, laughing or ridiculing or condemning, or I can do a much better job of making real connections and helping people feel like they matter. Hey, that's all I got for this episode of the Leading While Green podcast. Can you believe we make it to episode 31? It's been an incredible ride. Here's what I need for you from you. I need a review on iTunes. We got hundreds of people who listen to this every single month. Stop by iTunes. I hope you subscribed already. Stop by, leave me a 5-star review and some comments. Let me know how much of a difference this is making as we take this message of effective leadership around the world. Share it on social media. Every little bit helps. Hey, that's all I got for this episode of the Leading While Green podcast, where my mission is to help you live, learn, and lead with confidence. And until next time, take care and God bless.